Hallo und herzlich willkommen im Etablissement, dem kleinen Theater-Podcast für die Dame, die jederzeit bereit ist, ihren Koffer zu packen, in einen Garten nach Cornwall zu fahren und einen Strickpullover zu heiraten. Heute mit einer kleinen Episode aus New York über einen sehr speziellen Ort, und zwar das Theater on Film and Tape Archive in der New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, TOFT. Dem Archiv werden seit den 1970er Jahren die entscheidenden Theaterproduktionen am Broadway, Off-Broadway und sogar darüber hinaus archiviert, und es sind da natürlich die allergrößten Schätzchen anzusehen. Wie das Ganze zustande gekommen ist, wie sich das finanziert, wie dort gearbeitet wird und auch wie er selber zum Theater gekommen ist, erzählt der Chefkurator des TOFT, Doug Reeside. Viel Spaß beim Gespräch. What can you tell me about TOFT? Like, what is TOFT?
Yeah, so TOFT is a bit of a misnomer at this point. It stands for the Theater on Film and Tape Archive, but almost nothing is recorded to film or tape these days. It's recorded to digital video, as almost everything is. It was founded in 1970, I think, as recording, particularly video recording, became easier to do in live spaces, like, for the news and for sports and that sort of thing. There had been interest really from, I would say, the 50s to start trying to record theater on video for archival purposes. There was a real, anxiety from particularly the unions that are very strong in theater, the Actors Union, I think, in particular. They saw theater as separate from film, and that if recorded theater then began to blur that line of what is film and what is theater. And they also recognized that film actors tend to get paid a lot more for their work, because a lot of them work back and forth between film and stage. And so when they did film, they knew they got paid much more. And so they were concerned about what are they giving up if they allow themselves to be recorded.
Yeah.
But a lot of producers, particularly Hal Prince, who of course produced West Side Story and Fiddler on the Roof and lots of other shows in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and really all the way up to the end of his life in 2019, was really interested in trying to figure out a way to make this happen. And then there was a woman, Betty Corwin, who in 1970 really wanted to finally make this happen. So she volunteered at the library and said, if you give me a desk and a phone. Yeah. And so she was able to convince the unions and the guilds and everyone else to allow us to record at least off-Broadway shows for the archives. So starting in 1970, we recorded a very strange Japanese rock opera called The Golden Bat, which was the first show that nobody's ever heard of it since then. So we recorded that. And then we also started to do interviews.
Okay.
One of those interviews that we did was with Kander and Ebb, and who did Chicago and Cabaret. And this was, in the 70s when Cabaret had just, and the movie had just come out. The stage version was 1966. And the film version, directed by Fosse, was out in the 70s. So they interviewed them with Liza Minnelli, who appeared in that the film version. And Liza was so interested in the project that the library had undertaken to document theater that she invited us to record her Broadway concert, basically, Liza at the Palace. And then that sort of opened up the doors for us to start recording things after then on Broadway.
Oh, on Broadway.
Yeah. So we started doing Broadway around that time, 74, 75, something like that. We did the original production of A Chorus Line at the Public Theater off Broadway. But really, we didn't start doing Broadway until about the mid to late 70s. And even then, it was spotty. We did we did the original production of Evita, but not with Patti LuPone, with her replacement. And then really, starting in the 80s, I would say, we started getting much more. I mean, that is, we record about 30 to 40 shows a year. So it's not everything by any means, but it's most of the major titles that would happen.
Yeah.
So the year.
And with how many cameras, and how does that work?
Yeah,
nowadays.
It differs from production to production. Back in the early days, it was usually just one or two cameras at most. Now we usually use 3 to 5 for most productions. And in the last couple of months, actually, we started using robotic cameras that can be controlled remotely. So within kind of alongside hand operated cameras. So some of the theaters would prefer us actually to set up our cameras hanging from different lighting grids, and so that we don't have to use up a seat, mm-hmm. so they can still sell that ticket.
Okay.
And so we'll have different cameras throughout the theater, and we might have one or two hand-operated cameras alongside those robotically operated cameras. But that's really only something that we started this year.
And how many shows do you do a year at the moment?
About between 30 and 40 right now. So there's 41 Broadway theaters, so we don't get everything by any means. I mean, some of those theaters have shows that have been running forever, so Chicago or Book of Mormon or Lion King, you know, have been playing for years and years and years. But in the course of a Broadway season, there's probably about that many 30 to 40 shows that open and close over the course of the year. But we don't just do Broadway. We also do off-Broadway and sometimes off-Broadway as well.
How do you decide which shows to tape?
The things that I keep in mind are what do I think will be used in both the near future and also what will people in the slightly more distant future want to have seen? So it may not necessarily always be the thing that I think is the best work, but I know that, what's a good example? Drag the Musical right now is something that I think a lot of scholars will want to look at in the upcoming years. Or the play Cult of Love, which was just at the was just on Broadway. I think it's the kind of play that I think a lot of regional theaters will do. And so a lot of times directors of regional theaters will come and look at our recording before they do their own production. So it gives them kind of a sense of how the original production worked. So it's thinking both about the scholarly use in the future, but also about the kind of use for other creators, like what will someone want to see. And also, I mean, this is not something it's harder to predict somewhat, but there have been times when someone will almost use our recordings as a sort of audition. A director may come in and say, or a producer might come in and want to look at the work that somebody has done that we've recorded and to get a sense of kind of how their work is, particularly for something like design or direction, I think.
Yeah. So it's not, because I always thought it's like you do everything. The thing is like you do, but
yeah,
it's not.
It's not
like,
yeah,
you are choosing, or do you have to like talk to people? Is there a group of people who decides what
it's finally my choice, but I have a staff of about 17 librarians and technical assistants and folks that see a lot of theater as well. So every week we talk about what we've seen and what we think might be good to record. But finally it's my decision to figure out what to record.
And if people come to watch the tapes, is it true you can watch it once?
Yeah. So about a couple of decades ago, there was a concern that people in regional theaters were coming in and watching the recordings and then copying down all the choreography and direction and essentially stealing it without licensing it. And so the unions had asked us to try to restrict that in some way. And so we do have this restriction that you can only watch it once. That said, the curator can give an exemption for that. So if if it's clear that you are just needing to see it again for scholarly purposes or something like that.
If you do write a book about like the first version of Evita, you are probably allowed to see it a few times.
Yeah, that's right.
Ah, okay. And how, maybe that's a very German question, but how is this all paid for?
Hmm.
Or how does the finance part of this work?
Yeah, a lot of different sources. We apply for grants. This year we probably won't have the National Endowment for the Arts funding, but we do get a little, there's very, very small amounts of government funding that pays for it. There's a couple of endowments where people have given money that then every year the returns on those investments give us money to record some things. There's times when we can get either the producers or other interested parties to help us subsidize a recording. So that's happened a couple of times this year where I've wanted to record something and ask the producers, especially if it's a Broadway show that's doing really well, if they can help us pay for the recording.
Makes sense.
They do that. I mean, that used to be very common. It's a little less common nowadays. I don't know. Theaters become even more of a gamble, and so I think even successful shows are sometimes reluctant to help us pay for the recordings. It costs about $25,000 to record a Broadway show, so it's an expensive project, but we only have to pay the stagehands who interact with our equipment, and then we have to pay for our own videographers. But for the production itself, we only have to pay those stagehands who connect the wires to our cameras.
Okay. And you do nothing, like, it's stupid to say below, but you don't do nothing other than off-Broadway, not like downtown stuff?
We just did a show at a theater called Intar that does a lot of work in Spanish, and some of my staff had seen a production that they thought was really good there, so we filmed that. We've done a few things at Intar, but I'm hoping to do actually a lot more at some of the Spanish-speaking theaters in town in the coming years. And that's one of the kind of future goals I have.
Especially like Broadway shows that run for such a long time. Mm. Do you do like also replacement casts? No, it's usually just the... Or you try to get the original.
Try to get the original. There have been times when the replacement is so notable that we've recorded the replacement sometimes instead of, like, so for Funny Girl with Lea Michele last year, we recorded the replacement cast rather than the original cast. There was a My Fair Lady that happened at Lincoln Center a couple of years ago. We did film that with both casts. The year that the original production of Sunset Boulevard came out, there wasn't a whole lot of other musical theater happening on Broadway at that time. I think that year, I remember because it was one of the first years that I watched the Tony Awards, there, I think it was maybe the only show that was nominated as Best Musical that year. Or anyway, it was a very small pool of shows. And so that year we did film three different casts of Sunset Boulevard just because there was not much else happening.
Then it was, who was it then? Like... Glenn Close?
Yeah, Glenn Close, Betty Buckley, and Elaine Page. We got all three.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then we did Glenn Close again. When
Andrew paid for everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure
how No.
Yeah.
Never mind. Are there some like highlights of the collection where you think, oh, this is maybe your personal favorites or something, or which are like, you think like are totally precious or something?
So I really like the work of Jason Robert Brown, and we have a lot of his early work that, so he did he music directed his kind of New York premiere was a very strange musical called New York Rock that was created by Yoko Ono. And he, as a like 20-year-old, as you can see his head bopping in the background as he conducts and music directs the show. We also have his original piece, Songs for a New World, that opened at a little tiny theater off-Broadway in the mid-90s. Songs for a New World, our recording of Songs for a New World is pretty amazing. We have some great things from Shakespeare in the Park, Raul Julia in Taming of the Shrew. We have Audra McDonald in Carousel before she was super famous anyway. A lot of those kind of moments where we've captured someone at the beginning of their career is always really interesting to me.
Yeah, I can imagine. How does it work if somebody comes and wants to see a show? It's all digital.
It's not. In fact, there are people, most of our material is still served on physical media of some kind, mostly DVDs. And so when a patron comes in, they say they want to see the show. There's a person in the basement of this building who will put that DVD in a DVD player that is then piped up to the screens.
So the signal goes to the person downstairs who then has to...
They just put the DVD in.
Ah, okay.
I
read about this somehow and I thought like... Is it like I press stop here and then the person down there gets a signal to press stop? Yeah. It's not
no,
like this.
Not quite that bad.
You know? Okay, it's almost.
Yeah, almost that bad. Yeah. So we do have a lot of our material now has been digitized and it is on digital files in a way that we can serve them. But it's mostly just the stuff that was digitized from physical media, like from magnetic tape. And so we don't have a great way right now of serving material. The more recent stuff that we've digitized or that has been shot digitally. It's kind of a workflow question at this point. But I would imagine in the next couple of years, most content will be served digitally. I mean, in fact, it kind of already is because it's shot digitally and then kind of counterintuitively or like frustratingly, it's burnt DVD and then they serve it via the DVD, but the file still exists as a digital file. And I can request that file if I need a higher quality version.
And regarding this, like, now, looking at Germany, you're probably not an expert on German theater, but if I tell you, like, we have this, like, because you nodded so hard when I said, like, we have the separation between, like, entertainment and serious arts, what do you make of this? Or do you have thoughts about this? Because here it's so different, because I tell people, and some people I talk to, like, this Broadway actress, Julia Murney, a few days ago, and she almost didn't understand the question.
Yeah.
Because it's so clear that Broadway shows, entertainment is art. It's the arts.
Yeah. I feel like in Germany, it's probably that division is probably a little stronger even for Europe, but it still, I think, exists across Europe and even in the UK, which probably has the theater industry that is most similar to the New York industry. But even there, musical theater, I don't think, is largely taken seriously as an art form. It's seen as purely, it's seen more often as mostly commercial Whereas I think in New York, whatever one thinks of the result, it's seen as serious theater. It was some musical theater is seen as serious theater. And the lines between what is serious theater and just purely commercial are kind of blurry a lot of the time. It's like Gypsy, I think, would be seen as serious theater in a way that maybe Boop the musical is not. But
then again, Boop gets like a big review in the New York Times without any question.
That's right.
In Germany, it would be like...
Yeah, right.
Why?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things. I think that in the US, there isn't really a populist theater in the way that I think there is in Europe and in the UK in particular. Like, we don't have a culture of like pantomime. I mean, it's something like the Starlight Express that's in Germany.
Since 500 years.
That is, seems to be sort of like a Disney World kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
I think that's the closest that we have is something like Disney World or a theme park musical.
Yeah.
But we don't really have, so at the point that you're going to the theater or that something is happening in a legitimate theater, it's already seen as somewhat artistic. Like, and I think it brings with that a kind of cultural value and almost, I would say almost even a moral value, or like a, like it is seen as like better for you to have gone to the theater, even if you're seeing Boop versus watching reality television or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, so we would see, and the theater industry would see something like Elf at Madison Square Garden or A Christmas Story at Madison Square or the Rockettes, as that is more like what I think Europe sees all musical theater mm-hmm. like.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we would see that as more like the populist entertainment, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, that is sort of sneered at with our version of elitism. But I think because American musical theater is, I would argue, one of the major contributions of the American stage to the world mm-hmm. theater universe, mm-hmm. I would say more so than any of the American plays that we have. Like, I mean, sure, there's Arthur Miller and Eugene O'Neill and Tennessee Williams, but even with a few exceptions, I would say that Tennessee Williams has not had the impact on the world stage in the way that Rodgers and Hammerstein has, or that Stephen Sondheim has. So there's a way in which the American contribution is musical, it is serious musical theater.
Yeah.
And I think that the UK likes the, or like the London stage tends, they love Sondheim in a way that it's sometimes even the Americans don't, but I think that even like the Sondheim review that's playing right now still feels very stagey. When Sondheim is done here, it's done more like Chekhov, or done more like it's treated with that kind of seriousness. And Germany tends to take the shows and make them almost like operettas. Fiddler on the Roof will play in the Berlin Opera House, Porgy and Bess, for sure.
Sweeney Todd also.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then that's an entirely different kind of thing, I think, where there you're looking at the technique more than the story. So the performance as, and maybe the music too, but it's moved away from the storytelling part of theater, mm-hmm. I think, and more of like the admiring the technical accomplishments of the piece.
Yeah, that's right. It's always like Komische Oper does a Sondheim piece.
Yeah.
It's not like we're doing a Sondheim piece. It's just Komische Oper does a Sondheim
thing.
And that's also what the reviews are writing. So he finally arrived at the German opera houses or something.
Yeah.
It's always this. It's not like it's Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And I think... it does seem like in Germany, musical theater sometimes stands in as a kind of like almost caricature of Americanness. So like they'll bring in a Guys and Dolls or something like that. And actually the UK does this to some extent too, but I think it's even more the case in Germany, where German interpretations of something like Guys and Dolls is sort of looking and critiquing maybe American influence on Europe and the world at large. Which I think sometimes makes those shows more interesting. Like, I would rather see that version of Guys and Dolls than completely 1950s era style version of it. But I think that musical theater sometimes becomes a shorthand for that in Europe in a way that it doesn't really, well, that it isn't in the US.
It was so interesting, like, seeing my first Broadway show on Broadway on Monday, because I thought I knew Broadway shows from London.
Yeah.
Because I always took, because I don't fly, I'm so afraid of flying.
Yeah,
so I always took London as a substitute for New York.
Yeah.
And I realized it's
very different.
It's so different.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised how like the genre and the space and the Times Square around.
Yeah.
Seeing the show there with those actors presented like this.
Yeah.
With this merchandise and get out, get in, out, in. Perfect.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like it belongs here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like so American and so New York. And for this place and the way they act also, like this mixture of like, especially like Death Becomes, so it's almost like a drag show then like a fairground attraction show something they that's sell right. you something then it's touching then it's funny then it's like and I'm like it makes so much sense that it's happening right here it feels so American in a way.
That's right. And it's interesting, like I think the French musical theater is entirely different too, like, and I don't think it's really been looked at as much. Like I feel like
they have this big tradition of this like pop opera.
Yeah, that's right.
This. I've never seen one.
Yeah,
but I imagine also Les Misérables being like this pop, pop, half opera.
Yeah, it's maybe
hybrid.
I think you're right. I think in some ways the French shows are more like the Cirque du Soleil or the Las Vegas shows here. The shows that are much more like, you're right, the kind of like in the auditorium, like a circus sort of thing. Yeah.
Almost like half grand opera, half pop
or
something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But not like that story driven or like, in my head, they look very cheesy. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. Like it does feel like the campiness of French musical theater is much greater than Britain gets there too sometimes, but the French is very campy.
I'm also always interested in, I know how people come in contact with theater in Germany. Mm. How was your way to get to the stage or theater? Or how did that happen? How did you grow up with what kind of culture and everything?
Yeah. So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, which is right in the middle of the country. And I think it has one of the exceptions to there not being a populist theater, in that there's a big 10,000 seat outdoor amphitheater called the Muni in St. Louis that people go to as just kind of a summer tradition. Like, they may not be theater fans, but they will go see The Sound of Music or Peter Pan or The Wizard of Oz at the St. Louis Muni one day in the summer, and maybe next week they'll go see a baseball game. And they also have the last, I mean, it's a 10,000 seat auditorium, so it's giant, but the last four rows are free. So you can go, it's kind of first come, first serve.
Okay.
And you can go, and then people, you know, bring their kids and then they leave if they want to, that sort of thing. So I went a couple of times as a kid there. And then there's also the Broadway tours that go around the country. And so I saw Les Mis in a Broadway tour, and that really is what sold me. But I think that a lot of Americans, and myself included, the exposure to the theater, to theater history and to theater is in high school programs. So that we, you know, every high school, and I don't know if this is the case in Europe, where they, like every, most high schools will do at least one musical a year, and sometimes a couple of other plays a year. And so often they are kids that don't fit into other activities are drawn to this, even if they're not necessarily into theater as a audience member. Like, it becomes a welcoming space for a lot of different people. And so I got into theater in high school, and so kind of learned a lot of the ways of watching theater, the ways of making theater. And I think a lot of theater goers today probably had that experience. Like, I think probably most theater audiences, most New York theater audiences or regular theater audiences were theater kids in high school. I think there's probably very few people that just never did theater that go see theater here.
Yeah. Yeah. We have this like theater, little theater groups and also in schools, but not on a scale like musical. I know those YouTube videos like when high schools do like Thoroughly Modern Millie or something.
Right.
And they're like, whoop, ooh. How they all can sing, they all can dance, some of them.
Yeah.
You think like, well, where's that coming from?
Yeah.
So I know, but we don't have that in Germany.
Yeah. And there's a whole tradition too of if the school is doing these musicals, and often they're musicals that are from a different era. And so the kids are needing to learn about what are these references, even nowadays, probably in the 90s or whatever, like what is this thing that they've never heard of that is a kind of cultural reference. I did Annie in high school and in the 90s, but the Annie was written in 77, I think. And so there were references that I didn't know or kind of jokes that we didn't get. And so there's also that kind of educational, like learning about a different time period in history. And then Annie is also set during the Depression. So you learn that sort of thing. So it feels, I think, to a lot of Americans who have experienced theater, and particularly musical theater, in high school, that it is somehow educational, like virtuous in some way, that like doing mm-hmm. a musical is somehow a way that you learn more about something, and that it was treated that way in high school too. And so yeah. I think that may be why there is the kind of seriousness that's afforded it in the commercial, even shows, like you said, like Blue Bird Up to Comes are treated, you know, that they're recognized as not being Sondheim or Shakespeare, but they're also, they are, as you said, reviewed on the Times and considered for a Tony Award
yeah,
alongside sure. Glengarry Glen Ross or Ibsen's Ghosts or whatever, that yeah. sort of thing. Yeah.
So that, like this high school yeah. musicals, that's the way you came in contact with theater.
Well, that and also the Muni. Yeah. Those yeah. two. Yeah. So regional theater and then also regional theater tours and a high school theater.
Because I know how it works. Usually in Germany, it's always like, oh, you have to play the piano and maybe mm. your parents take you to the Stadttheater, the mm. local theater show where you see Hamlet.
Yeah.
Oh, you go maybe join the, some of the theaters offer like a theater youth mm. program or something. You go to this,
yeah.
this with me. Because I always try to find out like, how does this like Broadway, like, I don't know, like this entertainment sensibility happen in the,
yeah.
in the people here.
I think what's also different too in Europe versus the States is the secondary education or whatever it's called, college. You don't have to, in the States, there aren't that many conservatories. So you would still get a bachelor's degree in theater, which would require that you also take science and math and English classes and that sort of thing. Whereas at least, I don't know it as well in Germany, but in the UK, I think there's the, you sort of decide your path fairly early on. So if you want to be in theater, you're going to go to like a school that's just about preparing you to perform on the West End.
Yeah.
Versus like you may not have made that choice yet by the time you start school in the US. I think you have to make the choice to do theater earlier on. In the UK. I don't know about in Germany.
Yeah, probably. It's yeah. like there are a lot of people who are like coming fresh out of school and mm. go to the what is it like casting calls for the Vorsprechen for the Schauspielschule
right.
for the acting schools
yeah
and they are like 19 18
yeah.
yeah and they start being an actor
yeah I think here what probably happens is they get cast if they decide to go away from the traditional college education they will get cast in like a big professional show. So there are people that get cast in a Broadway show at 19 or something. And then they may go back to school eventually, but if their career just really keeps going on, they may never finish their degree and just kind of, they learn through the practice of
being in a Broadway show or something.
And then they may take like dancing classes or acting, you know, yeah. singing classes on the side, but it's not like a course or is that a degree in the same yeah. way?
Do you have last question? Yeah. Do you have a cultural like guilty pleasure thing? Like where you think like nobody should know?
Yeah.
I ask that everybody because
I'm trying to think, what is the show that I actually think Legally Blonde is pretty fun.
I love
yeah.
Legally
yeah.
Blonde.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I think, yeah. But it's interesting that, so I say that in the context of this conversation, I think there are conversations where I would have said something like Les Mis, even though I don't think of Les Mis as being quite so much of a guilty play. Like, I think it's actually a pretty good show.
But I can see the point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't put Legally Blonde in the same category of Les Mis. Like, I think of Les Mis as much more serious theater than Legally Blonde. But for someone that's, like, my colleague across the hall who's from Ireland, who really doesn't understand musical theater at all, I might say Les Mis on that. If you could ask me the same question.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
It's funny.